Pioneer announces the new lineup of high horsepower four-track tractors, including an 803 horsepower option. There's three new models introduced, the 9RX 710, the 9RX 770, and the 9RX 830. It's autonomy ready. The new John Deere 18 engine eliminates the need for diesel exhaust fluid and offers an optional 168 gallon per minute triple pump hydraulic system. Command View 4 Plus cab receives updates for increased operator comfort and visibility. Advanced technology package includes G5 Plus command center, display, and integrated Starfire 7500 receiver. The high horsepower 9RX models available for order in mid-March. For more information, go to johndeere.com or contact your local John Deere dealer.
It might be cold out, but you're already thinking about this spring. And not spring break, but spring tillage and even spring planting. Planting season is going to be here before you know it, so now is the time to get your planter ready to plant. If you want to take advantage of the latest in planter technology, you can through a performance upgrade from John Deere. You'll take your current planter with older Max Emerge row units and replace the row units with Exact Emerge, which means you'll get all the benefits and advantages of Exact Emerge, like planting at 10 miles per hour while getting precise seed placement and uniform emergence at a fraction of the price of a new planter. Upgrading your planter starts with a conversation with your local John Deere dealer, so give them a call or visit johndeere.com.
So I might run into people at the grocery store or, you know, at Walmart that are the farmers that I am trying to help,
right.
Which is a really awesome setup. And what that my job looks like, you know, on a day-to-day basis, we are looking into different research strategies, drainage being a really big focus, of how we're going to adapt some of these practices that are happening in other parts of the Midwest to the Red River Valley.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Welcome back, listeners. David Whitaker here with Farm for Profit podcast. I'm joined by co-host Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Banker Man, and Corey Hillebo, Corn, Pork, and Beans. And this is kind of a surprise podcast here at the NACADE conference. Mm-hmm. And along with this, we met this wonderful guest that we're going to have here today.
She's a doctor.
You guys are going to enjoy this. Just stay tuned.
Yeah.
Corey, remind us, how do people, if they want to see our podcast, how do they...
Yeah, if you want to see our podcast, well, the most thing that we're focusing on right now is TikTok. We got a new TikTok, and that we just hit 20,000 followers. Hopefully, by the time this comes out, we just hit 30,000 followers.
Yeah, let's get that.
YouTube, we've gotten over 1,000 subscribers there. We're getting a lot more traction there. We got our secret weapon, Emma.
I was just going
to
say.
Yeah, Ag with Emma has been helping us out with that. So thanks to her, because without her, it would not be happening.
So if you're a listener checking out TikTok, YouTube, et cetera, you probably got a little bit of the insight that came from Emma.
Absolutely. Hit subscribe, because that's the biggest thing that can help us out. We appreciate that. This doctor that we have on this podcast, we now have had multiple doctors. We just met this one down at the show impromptu. Got some great information to share.
You know
share
what
here.
We didn't do with her was we didn't make fun of her school.
Oh, man.
But Gophers. Is that like, yeah, it's Minnesota, University of Minnesota. Yeah. What do you even make fun of up there?
Are there the Golden Gophers? Have you ever seen a Golden Gopher?
No, it's snow. It's cold. They don't have gophers there.
Well, don't have gold. Has anybody ever found gold in Minnesota?
I don't think so.
Well, they do all winter. Just go ice fish.
They say you betcha.
Ski.
Uh-huh. Mm. Ice fish and
maybe
ski.
They. You know what I'd like to try is curling.
That would be fun.
We should have a Farm for Profit curling team. I'd just like to yell.
Somebody from Canada set that up. Maybe Quick Dick could set that up.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's funny. We do have a listener review brought to you again by Tractor Zoom. Before we get to that review, let's listen to what TJ has to say today.
Thanks. In our last Tractor Zoom used equipment market update, we talked about how strong that row crop tractor market is, and that market remains strong through January of 2023. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the most common question we get from farmers: what's my tractor worth? And we're going to compare trading in our 2018 John Deere 8370R for a 2021 John Deere 8R410. So what are some of the main things you need to consider when you're going to trade in that tractor? The first thing is obvious: understand the value of your machine, what machine specs it has, year, hours, drive, technology. Think about future maintenance and repairs. If I keep this tractor, what's it likely going to cost me versus trading up to a newer one with lower hours? And then develop that replacement strategy for your farm. So let's take a look at that 2018 8370R. So I went out to tractorzoom.com, built my equipment list, and entered in the exact specs of this machine. So it's got 2,200 hours, MFWD, 3-point PTO, premium cab, good condition. And I come up with an average auction value for similar machines of $299,000 with a dealer listing average of around $320,000. So I did the same thing on TractorZoom in my equipment list, added a 2021 John Deere 8R10, very similar specs, around 500 hours on this machine. The average auction value is around $440,000 with an average dealer list price of $462,000. And so if I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to trade this in, that's going to result in a boot value of around $140,000. So in today's market, if I want to finance that tractor over 5 years with an interest rate of around 6.5%, you know, that's going to result in around a $34,000 payment every year. And I'm going to likely pay around $171,000 over the next year or next 5 years with interest and principal. So the final thing we want to think about is expected repair costs. So if I keep that 8370R, I'm likely going to accumulate around $55,000 in repair costs over the next 4 years. Versus, you know, I might land somewhere in the $20,000 to $30,000 mark with that 8R410, and that's assuming that I don't have any warranty, which we would likely have on this piece. So, understanding the financing costs, understanding your repair costs, and then finally, really understanding your replacement strategy on your farm is key. This concludes today's episode for the Farm for Profit podcast. Thank you for joining us as we discuss the evaluation of trading in our 8370R for an 8R410. Again, you can keep up to date on your equipment values by downloading the TractorZoom app or going ahead and adding your equipment on TractorZoom.com. And join us next time as we continue to dive deeper in the used equipment market, specifically looking at combines.
Coming off of TikTok, just what you guys were talking about.
How do you say that?
Just earn. Maybe it's just trying.
Just trying.
Oh, I like just earn.
Trying.
says, I don't know where this is. Where this says just earn. From. Says parents always know best, right? I love this podcast.
Does that mean like his parents like the podcast too?
Or maybe they made him listen to it.
I think his parents told him about it.
Maybe we're punishment. You have to listen to these guys because you mouthed off. You have to listen to 3 episodes of the Farm for Profit podcast.
That could
be. We'll take
painful.
It any way we get it.
And you got to go back. Yeah, the real punishment would be is you got to go start with episode 1. We've gotten a lot better.
You know what, though? They'd have a college degree by the time they got done, probably.
That's right.
We should start offering credits.
Yeah, we should. Like, we get continuing ed here for listening.
Guys, they don't want to listen to us. They want to listen to the doctor. So let's get into our conversation today. Talking about maybe there's a different management technique after you install drainage tile to what type of a nutrient plan you put together.
Also, call or text us. Leave us a review. 515-207-9640. You know what we should get? We should get one of those P.O. boxes. I want to see if someone would actually write us a letter. Write us a handwritten review, and then maybe we can start putting them up on the wall. That'd be kind of cool.
On the wall. There you go. Let's get into it for now.
Farm for Profit listeners, this is Shay Folk here with Chris Barron talking to you on a Margin Minute and a little bit about Profit Manager. Chris, you designed this tool, and part of it is the crop insurance calculator. As we're sitting here in February looking at this pricing period, how have clients and farm operations that you've worked with over the years used this crop insurance calculator for the decisions that they make in their business?
Yeah, it's just that time of year. You know, it's taking the insurance calculator, plugging in your average weighted APH, and then plugging in the spring price and kind of getting to what that level of coverage is on a per bushel basis and a dollar basis. And so that way, you know, when you think about your marketing and everything, it really can improve your marketing and just really help with just some of that risk mitigation that we all need to do this time of year as we head into the spring planting time frame. It's time to really run the numbers and make sure we understand what the risks are so we can do the appropriate marketing.
And crop insurance, it's one of those things that it's kind of the hardest decision that you have to make once a year, but you want to make sure that you make the right one. And the other thing too that we see is you know, if an indemnity payment of some sort is triggered, that you can go back in and see how does that affect my profitability. This insurance calculator that you built takes that number, builds it right back into your revenue so that you know better where you need to be marketing and what that information looks like moving forward.
Yeah, the one thing you never want to forget about crop insurance is it's not just a yield component, it's not just a price component, but it's a comprehensive blend of the two. That's why they call it revenue assurance. And so just because your yield is good doesn't mean that you shouldn't, you wouldn't possibly still collect, and conversely the other way. So it's really a tool that lets you really see a lot of different advantages.
Well, Shay Folk and Chris Barron here with your Margin Minute. If you're interested in learning more, check out farmprofitmanager.com.
So this will be a fun conversation as we explore deeper. Some of our most downloaded episodes are around tile and drain tile installation and the benefits that it has, but we haven't really pursued what do you do after you install the drain tile. So we're going to have an expert here sit on this round table. We're sitting at a round table here at the Drainage Expo. Assistant Professor, Extension Specialist in Nutrient and Water Management, Ms. Lindsay Pease. And you've been given a presentation this whole week down here about what to do with your nutrients plan after you install tile.
Doctor.
Ooh, is it doctor?
It
yeah,
is.
I do have my PhD.
Nice. Well, I don't mean to slight
you. No, you're totally fine.
Good catch.
You know,
you should probably get the university to put that on the webpage.
I have it right here.
Yeah, is it
Dr.
weird?
Lindsay,
I will. Oh. I will submit.
yeah. Oh. Just says
oh,
Lindsay.
Oh, that is my department.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Well, you've been busy. You've probably been one of the most attended sessions since all of them down here.
You know, there has been just an absolutely great crowd, you know, both days, full room, you know, I would say probably about 50 people each time I talked, which is awesome. I think that is, you know, so it's been so much fun to be here at the expo this year. I think, you know, it's obviously the first time you guys are doing it, but, you know, so much fun for me to be here.
How did you hear about the expo?
So I was invited as one of the speakers. So way back in the summer, I'm pretty sure somebody saw my presentation that I was planning to give for the International Drainage Symposium, and they said, "Hey, that sounds like a really great talk that we should get for, you know, these drain contractors." And so then I was on the program and I put it on my calendar, booked a flight, and here we are. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So first of all, let's tell our listeners, give them kind of an idea of what you do for your day job.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into the topic.
Sure. Yeah. So, as you mentioned, assistant professor and extension specialist. Basically, what that looks like is I work and live in the Red River Valley of Minnesota. I am an employee of University of Minnesota, but they send me all the way up north at an outstate experiment station. We call these research and outreach centers.
Okay.
So, but basically what that means is that I get to live in the area that I am doing research.
Okay.
And work. And, you know, that means I might run into people at the grocery store or, you know, at Walmart that are the farmers that I am trying to help,
right.
Which is a really awesome setup. And what that my job looks like, you know, on a day-to-day basis, we are looking into different research strategies, drainage being a really big focus, of how we're going to adapt some of these practices that are happening in other parts of the Midwest to the Red River Valley, which is, you know, as everybody knows, it's cold. I am located an hour and a half north of Fargo, almost at the Canadian border. So we are really cold, and we grow some slightly different crops. There is some corn and soybeans, but it's not all corn and soybeans. We also have a lot of spring wheat, sugar beets are a big crop, mm-hmm. you know, and there's some dusting in there of potatoes, dry beans, sunflowers. You know, we get kind of a little bit of everything.
Any canola?
Yes, canola too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Big variety.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're here to talk about, we know that in a majority of the instances, installing drainage tile in a farm improves productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in Dave's case, improves value,
mm-hmm.
but it improves productivity, which is also value to our listeners that are farmer operators.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some specific things that we should be doing in a field that has tile, whether it's patterned or a different configuration, to make sure we're maximizing the potential of this soil, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We, in this research comes from a project that I started really early when I started my position at the university. We actually took a field that had never had drain tile in it. It does have surface drains, but it had never had drain tile, and we did an installation at a field scale so that we could really get at this question you're asking, like, exactly. You know, what do we do? What do we see changes in? How do we change the management? So we are, you know, kind of learning and adapting in real time. And, you know, one of the things that you need to think about when you're adding tile in for the first time is you are adding a little bit more air in the soil profile. You're changing a little bit of what the microbes are doing, what they're eating, how they're metabolizing. And those little changes are going to affect the nutrient cycling, you know, what's happening with the fertilizer you put on, and so really we've been doing a lot of intensive soil sampling, water sampling, and even air sampling to figure out, okay, so you put this fertilizer on, where does it go and how is that different if in a drained field versus an undrained field?
How do you sample? You sample in air in the soil?
Yeah, so the way that you do it is it's actually pretty low tech. Yeah. You take, well, low tech for
take
the collection
a Walmart
part.
Sack.
Yeah.
Captured up.
Yeah. No, what we do, we have
it's a Ziploc bag. It's gotta be air.
Yeah. You probably could actually take a sample with a Ziploc bag. I think it'd be interesting. I don't know how you'd keep it sealed, but anyway. But what we do is like a PVC pipe that you that we like pound into the ground, and then you have a lid that goes on top of it, and there's like a rubber septa that is in the lid, and you can take a syringe and put it through the septa and collect a sample of the air, and then we run that in the lab later on. And so, yeah, so you take a sample, you know, right after you put the cap on, and then after, you know, 20 or 30 minutes, and then again after 45 minutes to an hour, and then that gives you a rate of, you know, how those concentrations of gases are changing. A lot of people do this for greenhouse gas analysis. In our case, we were actually looking at it to see, it tells us, you know, different concentrations tell us, you know, how happy the microbes are, like mm-hmm. how active they are, if they have enough water, but also tells us if they have too much water, because they prefer to breathe. They prefer to respire carbon dioxide like all of us do. But if they're underwater or get too wet, then they'll start releasing other greenhouse gases, you know, nitrous oxide and methane in particular. So, that's how we're measuring the air.
So how do they measure it? Parts per million?
Yeah, it comes out in parts per million. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
We have a big piece of equipment in our lab that we can bring these like vials back in and then just run it, and it tells us, reads out the concentration. So
you, after the farm, somebody puts tile in, you're testing the air to see how it might have changed it. What have you seen? Has it changed it? Like, has it?
So actually, yeah. So that is one of the things that we did see in the first couple years is that when you're looking at, you know, the drained and the undrained section of the field, that undrained section, the original condition, is wetter, you know, in the top of the soil profile. So those microbes, so they are actually releasing different gases. So you're releasing more nitrous oxide and more methane, and those are notable in terms of air quality, because when you're thinking of global warming and the potential for high concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, those gases count more. They're like, in an accounting sense, they're like worse than carbon dioxide. So it's actually seeing a little bit of a benefit in terms of those kind of gases coming out of the soil from drainage, which is like a great thing we've found already.
Right. So that's an environmental benefit.
Yeah.
But there's clearly an economical benefit to our listeners, the farmers.
Yeah.
And obviously you're able to tell that by testing and trapping the air, but what's the science behind what happens to the soil when it can properly be drained?
Yeah, so what's happening in the soil when it's drained is basically you are using the drains to work with gravity just get rid of a little bit of extra water. It's actually not that much water. It seems like a lot of water, you know, especially if you're watching a tile flowing. It seems like a lot of water coming out. But really, the fraction that is being let out of the soil is pretty small. It's only a couple, you know, a couple percentages, maybe 5% of the, we call that the drainable porosity. Anything that can leave, if you were to take a slice of the soil, like a cake, right, and it just whatever would naturally fall out of that, that's all we're draining.
Taking what the soil can't hold.
Exactly, yeah. The soil would not hold it anyway. That's why you don't, but it just takes longer for it to drain down in our heavier clay soils, those heavier textured soils. So yeah, you're replacing that water with air, and then that gives, and you know, then that again changes. It's kind of about changing the biology of what's happening from there. And that's, the air is good for their crop roots. Obviously they like to breathe. And
I kind of think of it from a farmer perspective as the soil is like a sponge.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the tile and you get 3 inches or 10 inches of rain and the soil's already saturated, it's got nowhere to go but run off. But if you're kind of getting that excess water out of that sponge, it can actually soak it up when it rains. Yeah. That's my
that is, and that is 100% correct. Yeah. Yeah. And if you take that sponge, yeah, you dunk it in water, really saturate it. And yeah, just what's dripping out of the sponge, that's what you're draining. You're right. Not rigging the sponge. That's, I think, one of the topics, you know, we talked about this during this meeting, or myths about drainage. And a big myth about drainage is that it might over drain the soil. But it's not physically possible. It can't wring the sponge. You can't dry it out. You're just taking away that little bit of extra.
Right. So are you guys testing the water coming out too?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are you seeing, I mean, that's been a big focus in a lot of ag and in the ag city, kind of where people's food come from, nitrates in water coming down. You know, Des Moines, we had a big lawsuit here and all that. Are you seeing negative effects from more tile to nitrates?
Can I rephrase that? Are you seeing evidence that there is more nitrates because of tile?
Yeah. Yeah, so that can be it's a tricky question and a hard question, right? Because that is one of the pathways that we can lose nitrogen is in the water. And again, this water would be leaving the field anyway, but we are losing it a little bit quicker with the drainage. And that goes along with the nutrients that are dissolved in the water. So when you have tile drainage, it will be moving some of that extra nitrogen out with the drainage water. As far as the concentration goes, you know, some of the ways that you can prevent that, I mean, I think that's one of those things. It's a known thing that you can lose some nitrates with the tile. But we have been spending a lot of time trying to think of strategies of how to minimize that, because not only is it bad, you know, to see, especially with fertilizer prices the way they are, you don't want to lose that anyway from a drinking water perspective or from any other perspective. You know, it's about timing the application to when the crop is going to take it up. You know, that's why we always, you know, try to push spring application or split plant, you know, just those things that are a little bit harder as you're scheduling and you're planting, but they can help in terms of nutrient use efficiency. Now that's on the nitrate side.
Yeah.
But on the phosphorus side, what we actually see is that when that water is filtering through, that water usually has lower concentrations of phosphorus compared to surface runoff. So again, you're talking about that sponge effect and then the soil having the ability to absorb instead of just running off the surface. That water that's running off the surface can carry a lot of soil with it.
This morning, Yeah.
It can carry a lot of soil. And then that soil can be holding a lot of phosphorus in it. Phosphorus is one of those nutrients that's really sticky. So it'll bind to the soil. And when you're draining, then you're actually moving that downward and giving it a chance to have more contact with a deeper part of the soil. So you actually lose less phosphorus when you are draining. So that's actually one of the flip side.
Question for you. You said when we're draining the excess off the sponge, we're replacing it with air.
Yeah.
Is there an opportunity to replace it with anything else?
Ooh, replace it with anything else. Like how do you mean?
Like anything that could be good. If I take something bad out of my schedule for the day, a bad habit, I might replace it with a good habit. Well, let's say we have excess water we remove. We have a void space there. Can we put more fertilizer? Can we put more something in the soil that would help?
Fertilizer's chemistry, and it has to attach to something. Right.
Yeah. So I think usually it is kind of a water, air, or soil kind of thing. So there's really kind of three buckets you can capture things in. I would think that having more air, you know, you could probably collect. What could you collect? You might be able to collect some, you know, more organic matter,
like a mineral,
yeah, that's a really interesting question, and that's one that I hadn't really thought about before. I think it's a great question.
Certainly wouldn't want to replace it completely, because healthy soil needs a certain percentage of air.
Right,
the roots need air. The microbes are breathing oxygen.
Right, so they
need that.
You know, but like being a paramedic, even when somebody is in trauma, traumatic injury or something, we start an IV. And when we start an IV, we'll put lactated ringers or normal saline, not blood, but it still works. But the difference between giving somebody actual blood and giving them normal saline, sugar water, the difference is blood can carry oxygen. So part of the reasons for shock, so I'm thinking shock to the soil, shock to the human body, is they're missing that oxygen carrying component through the vascular system. Well, if we got rid of the water, is that what is carrying all the everything there? You said it has to attach to it, or can we attach? Could we, as scientists, attach something to air that would be more beneficial to our soil? So just food for thought.
Here's what you could replace it with: is roots. Right,
yeah.
The roots are going to have.
Actually, yeah, that is what you could replace
it with. The roots are going to have a least path of resistance to root better and go find more nutrients and.
Yeah, whether that's the growing crop, a cover crop, whichever. But I want to get back to the presentation that you've been mainly putting on down here.
Yes.
Is okay. We know that there's science changing. After we installed our drain tile, we know that the soil composition has a different makeup. So how do we know to make a fertilizer rec change or any type of a change to our agronomic program in the crop years following this? Is it just let's go take some soil samples? Or is there a better way to get a jump on maximizing the potential of your newly drained farm?
We are looking at measuring all of these different pathways to get at the answer to that question. And, you know, if we think about, okay, well, we might be losing a little bit of the fertilizer in the water. We might be losing a little bit less in the air. We're kind of trying to like almost like a checkbook balance out. Then what are you, what's the crop itself is taking up? And we find that, you know, and this is always the case, right? The crop is the one that's taking up the most. And so we did see, we had one really wet year in 2020 and one really dry year in 2021. So in our really wet year, we ended up kind of, if you look at it a couple different ways, having about 25 pounds of nitrogen less left over in the soil after in our drained portion of the field compared to our undrained. So not a huge difference, but we also looked at, and then one of the ways we can calculate that is just with a regular soil nitrate test. Before the growing season starts, we would go out and take samples kind of right before planting, and we would check that out. The other way that we tried to calculate that different crediting system is with what's normally used in soil health is actually called the Haney test. That is another test that we use to see, is there a difference in crediting? And this again gets back into that soil chemistry. What are the microbes eating? How much are they eating? How happy are they? And that's what the Haney test is really traditionally used for, but you can use it to calculate nitrogen credits too, because they're going to be using some of that nitrogen and metabolizing it. So But looking at the Haney test, we didn't actually see in the first 2 years any difference in the credits based on the carbon pools themselves, which that is actually kind of an interesting result in and of itself, because right. we sort of expected those carbon pools to change.
Yeah, expected the shock factor.
So the
yeah.
Haney test measures plant available
yeah.
nutrients, right? So not your like acid test, like a Bray or, you know, like type that.
That's right, not an acid
test. So you saw nothing different in what's actually available to the plant.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was a really surprising result to us. It changed, you know, from season to season, but not necessarily either the drained and the undrained condition. So,
I guess I would have expected it to shoot right up.
Yeah.
Boom, we put more tile on this farm. We now have potentially more micronutrients available to the plant.
So now I'm wondering, as we're at a vendor conference here, and we say that it has a 15, their sign right over there, it says 15% return mm-hmm. on this. If we don't have more available stuff, how many years of trials does somebody do to have a good fact to say that, hey, in these couple years that we tested it, we didn't see anything, but they might be anomalies. Is it a 10-year process before we call it, like, this is good data? Like, what's the coefficient there?
Yeah, you know, that is, again, one of the things that that you really do need a longer-term study to be able to say, you know, pretty definitively. What we're going to look at for this, and for a lot of our edge-of-field type research, when we're looking at a whole field scale and you can't really, you know, divide it up into plots, I think you really need about 4 years of data to start to see, make sure you're catching, you know, like I said, we've caught a wet year, we've caught a dry year. 2022 was a little in between, and then so after 2023, after this next year, then I'm going to start feeling a little bit more comfortable trying to switch up some of the practices and seeing, like, okay, well, now we have a baseline understanding of what happened in the first 4 years, but then what's going to happen after that?
You know, back to your 15% comment, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that number is, that's almost then essentially just the plant benefit of, one, not being drowned out in the field.
More roots.
But two, being able to have and establish a healthier plant. It's not necessarily getting access to more nutrients.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was asking, can we fill that void? You know, we had a partnership for a while, and we talked about biologics. Could we enter in, like you were doing test trials on your farm, Corey, could we enter in more biologics that we see those rates go up? She was talking about the gases in the soil. If the air is there, they're testing it with the PVC, they got the membrane on top. What if we entered in more biologics, and would that cause our gases to be different, and now there's more product for our crops, we get better yields?
I would say you are inherently doing that by draining. If you are creating a better environment for those microbes, they're going to
without adding another product.
And we all know that, you know, just because you put nutrients on the soil doesn't mean it's going to get into the plant. You need that those microbes in the soil to help, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship between the plant and the root exudates and all that. So are adding more microbes.
Yeah, I think you are. You are, and the other thing, you know, that might be happening too, that why we didn't see anything in the first couple of years is we do see those biological communities in these microbes. People who are studying that are seeing there's a little bit of a lag time between, you know, and I think some of the biological products are people are kind of starting to notice the same thing too. It might not necessarily take in year one, but you know, the microbes are not that different than, you know, humans on kind of a ways. Of that they're slow to change, and they're slow to change to their environment. So I do think, you know, it is possible. We're gonna keep doing this research. So that's just after 2 years. But you know, we're gonna keep looking at this over time to see if we can catch maybe a shift happening.
Because I fully expected, having not attended your session here, for you to come back and say, oh yeah, we need to completely change up your mix. You know, we're going through a program right now focusing just on human diet and adjusting your protein and carbohydrate intake, let alone in the field. So we had a conversation with a couple of contracts down here about your presentation, and some stated that just due to the, maybe it was the better airflow or whichever it was, that they were able to reduce their inputs by, you know, a percentage, 15, 20, 30%, because their field drained better, or like I said, the microbes were more active. But it's not necessarily you're stating from a base level to change recs, it's right. still get your soil sample and monitor what's available.
Yeah, I think that really is the key is, you know, you're going to make your best, most efficient decision by getting out and testing the soil, knowing what's there. And I know that's hard. And trust me, I've been out on plenty of freezing cold days soil sampling.
We just wanted a silver bullet.
Yeah, I know. And I always wish I could bring you a silver bullet. But I think that's true in a lot of the, you know, nutrient management work is that it's these pools are really complex, and I think test your soil, apply mm-hmm. yeah, I don't see a big need to change the fertility recommendation. There's kind of the, you know,
valuable,
but yeah,
because that's an expectation our listeners need to have if mm-hmm. they're going to make a tiling decision. You may be able to change your fertilizer recs, but that's not the sole basis of doing it. You don't go into a perfectly drained farm, add more tile to hopefully put in less fertilizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely true. And
I'm kind of just thinking of like some of the areas on our farm that we need tile in, like the lower areas that are 3-4 years out of 5, like you don't get a crop, or if mm-hmm. you do, it's like, you know, it's 200 bushels over here and then it's 80 bushels. Mm-hmm. In a way, if you drain that area, those are usually the highest testing on our soil samples because we're not utilizing the nutrients that we've been applying.
For sure.
So you probably could mm-hmm. get by with less on those areas
right.
that yeah. need it.
Yeah, and I think that is a good point too. You might be able to, yeah, those crops are growing, you know, and they're growing a better yield, a more consistent yield. And even after 1 year, we saw a yield boost on our drained portion of the field. So that's higher yep. yields, more organic matter. So, you know, that I think it's funny because people do like to think about soil fertility on one side and then, you know, water management in another bucket. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the water is so critical, a component of farming. And, you know, it is sometimes hard to keep in mind that, yeah, if you can manage that water, that is going to help you so much in a lot of different ways.
Do you have any kind of, for listeners, we have listeners from all over. Some of them might have silty clay loam. Some of them might have Webster clarions, Nicolettes, et cetera, in soils. And some of them might have sandy clay loam.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are sandy and lighter soils are going to have a completely different ball game than maybe your test plots. So how is it? Does it have just as much of an effect on the good stuff as it does on the bad?
Yeah, I think probably when you're like where you're going to see the most dramatic, you know, improvement or changes is going to be the heavier soils, you know, because again, it's how long do those soils normally sit and hold water before they start, before they drain. And if you're on a sandier soil, those can be pretty flashy systems on their own, you know, drought, like if you're in a really sandy, then you get a rainfall and it, you know, what right. it infiltrates is gone pretty quick, which is, so yeah, I do think your mileage is going to vary depending on your soil texture. In where I'm at in the Red River Valley, we have a lot of farms that, are clay for a couple layers. But then once you get maybe 2 or 3 feet down, you might see a lens of sand in there just because of the way the geology is in the area. You know, it's all kind of sandwiched together and yeah, so it's going to have an effect on how that water mm-hmm. moves and where it wants to move.
I mean, her information is also really good because it's displaying that, you know, we did our myth-busting episode mm-hmm. in December about do nitrates go quicker down the drain tile or mm-hmm. do the fertilizers that we put out disappear? And it's nice to see that it doesn't change.
Yeah.
Dictating that at least it still stays there. You know, we were hoping maybe for a big aha moment of we can put less fertilizer out, but it's also good to know that we don't have to put more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we don't see any need for more fertilizer with our once you add drainage. Yeah.
Nice.
Have you started cutting back fertilizer in trials?
We haven't tried that yet, but I do think that would be a really interesting thing to start looking at. We actually have, in addition to our big drainage plots, which we've been talking about, you know, we have some older drainage plots that are actually have different drain spacings in them. Right now, we're sort of rotating through. I'm partnering with a plant pathologist, and we're looking at interactions between, you know, plant disease and drainage, but on those other crops and, you know, and, but I think that would also, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, you know, like that would be a really great place to do something like that,
right.
A fertility trial on to, with different drain spacings too. Mm-hmm.
That's so good. We kind of talked about two things you're studying. One is how it affects the plants and the soil. Okay. The other one was almost, or what I heard, I guess maybe I heard it wrong, but more of a global warming, like what is off-gassing and how is that changing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had a question back 10 minutes ago on the global warming side of the world.
Climate change.
You have a PVC pipe that comes up and you're testing the air. Okay. In real estate, we have to disclose radon gas, colorless, odorless gas in houses. The some houses have it, some houses don't. Iowa's really known for radon gas, but the one of the determining factors is, did it escape from the soil? Mm-hmm. Did it come up into your house? You're testing it out a test port that you made. How much of that's actually escaping anyway, though? So, you know, yeah, you're, oh, hey, the levels went up. More microbes are off-gassing methane, and now our levels went up. How much of that ever even reaches the air, though? You're testing it in a port that you're drilling down to where it's at. Does it ever escape?
So, yeah. So when we are setting this, we're actually not going very deep. We are kind of, we are at the interface of where the soil is meeting the air. So that is exactly.
I picture 3 foot, 4 foot.
No, it's not that deep.
The tube's isolating what's being released from that square inch.
But you're not deep. Okay. I was thinking that they were all the way down and it wasn't escaping the ground. Okay. Fair enough.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is there a play on carbon for this? Like if the soil's saturated and it's putting off methane and greenhouse gases, but yet you tile, could that be part of your
carbon credit equation?
You know, it really should be. I don't know. And you know, every carbon crediting program is different. But, you know, this greenhouse gases and measuring those from the soil is actually, I think, a pretty understudied area in drainage. So there's not a ton of work out there that's, you know, that is looking at exactly that. But I do think, you have the potential. You have to be including that as part of the overall equation.
Corey, you're so smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
So smart.
I had one question, or not a question, just a comment on the nitrates going down from 10 minutes before, or maybe 15. If it's not drained, or if it's not tiled, and that soil is sitting there saturated, and you got nitrogen in the soil, you're going to lose it anyway. It's just not going to end up in the drinking water. It's going to go up into the atmosphere.
Yeah, right? You're right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Yeah.
So I'd rather take my chances of it leaching down and hopefully connecting to another soil colloid and getting captured and then getting to the tile rather than just sitting there and being gone completely.
Right. And you
know, running off the surface.
Yeah, or running off the surface. And I think that is definitely something to keep in mind. And, you know, and we are having so many, there are a lot of options available. You know, if you do see a lot of nitrates leaving in the water, and that can be really site specific. You know, things like wood chip bioreactors, those are huge, especially in Iowa.
We had a couple
right
put in
now.
by our farm.
Yeah, wood chip bioreactors are one of those ways. It's, you know, you're just filtering it out, and it's a big expense, but, you know, but again, that is an option.
So you got me thinking. We've talked about a couple different benefits that tile could. One, gets the water away, maybe more root system, displaces more air, etc. Room for other things to come in, might help with gases, might help with air. We know just from being at the conference here, guys, that tile helps. Okay. So tile helps. You have a PhD in this. What are we missing? What else? What are the other positive factors that nobody talks about?
Ooh, that's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, what we haven't talked about really are some of the benefits of it. Lets you out on your field just a couple days sooner.
Time.
It saves you time. You aren't necessarily driving. If you are driving, your, you know, planter on the field, when it's wet, you're compacting the soil. You're squishing that soil column down. And boy, that can be, then that's creating a feedback loop, or then you might need more tillage. So drainage can be really one of those baseline factors that makes everything else a little bit easier. If you can plant a couple days earlier, then the crops will have, you know, a little bit warmer. They'll be a little bit warmer. They'll be have a few more growing degree days. Actually, that is something that we haven't talked about too a lot, is the fact that when you don't have the water in the soil profile, that lets the air is warmer than the water. Just like if you think about, you know, jumping in a lake, right?
Oh, sure.
You know, so that keeps your seed a little bit warmer. And, you know, we all know just those couple of degrees can make a difference by the end.
Never even thought about that.
No, that's really good. Well, this has been a pleasure.
Yes.
You know, we listeners, you don't know how hard we worked to get Dr. Lindsay here scheduled, not because of her, but because of our schedule down here. So we appreciate you sitting down and hanging out with us.
Oh, absolutely.
A question that you might not have expected is we ask the same question to every guest that we have on our podcast, and that changes quarterly, semi-annually. And the one that we're working on right now is, to you, what do you view as success?
It doesn't have to be related to farming. It could be anything.
Doesn't have
in life.
To be related to tile. Just what does success look like to Dr. Lindsay? So as you think about that, we were here again, Conservation and Drainage Expo down here in Des Moines, the North American one, first
opposed
ever.
To the South American one.
Opposed to the South American one.
Opposed to the Brazil. Yeah.
If they want to invite us to come be masters of ceremonies for that, we would love to, but. First ever, hopefully it will be a second. It sounds like there's already talks and discussions of another one, another great event being put together. But we were here talking with Dr. Lindsay about what types of fertility requirements change after installing drain tile on a farm. And we learned that there isn't a magic, oh, boom, 30% reduction. I get to put 30% less fertilizer out there. There may
not yet
become that type, but just to automatically put tile on the ground, make a switch, the data isn't there. Not yet. But it's good to know that it also doesn't require more fertilizer. So it was kind of good to learn that what happens to the soil profile after we install our tile, how that affects the way our micronutrients are working together to help boost our yield. But ultimately, the water wicking ability of the drain tile is what allows us to generate higher yields. So we had a really good conversation there. We know there's a lot of benefits to drain tile, which is why it's still one of our most downloaded conversations. And I'm sure this one will do just as well. But listener, that's what we're hanging out with today. That was a little stalling for you to determine what success looks like to you.
Yeah, you know, I think that's such a great question and something that we don't think about as often as we should. But I would say, you know, even just thinking about, you know, across work, across personal things, if success for me is definitely trying to, you know, leave others and other people a little bit better than I found them, you know, helping people out, bringing a smile to somebody's face, you know, helping somebody out. And I think that's a big theme of my, you know, big benefit of my work is I get to do this great research and ask these questions and hopefully at the end of the day, answer questions, help people farm a little bit better, be good, better stewards of the land, you know, just kind of all coming together and just kind of success to me doing my little part to make the world a better place.
And for those of you listeners that are not watching our YouTube channel, you have missed it. She talked about making people smile. I don't think we've ever had a guest that has smiled and answered every question throughout the entire podcast.
You got a good point.
Dr. Lindsay has a smile that is infectious, ladies and gentlemen. Watch it on YouTube.
Yes. No, this has been our pleasure. If people want to follow your research and what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I would say if you follow University of Minnesota Extension, a lot of my stuff gets posted there. We have a Minnesota Crop News blog that I write for, but you can also follow me on Twitter if you're still doing Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at LPsUMN is nice. My handle. Also we have a really great University Extension nutrient management team where, you know, where they will share all the work that we do, and they're really great at pushing us to get those things out to people. Yeah.
That's good. And make sure you write in when you find her profile to make sure her department puts Dr.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lindsay in front of that.
Following.
Oh, Followed. Perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you. Also, listeners, we appreciate you listening in as well. Thank you again. Send us your topics to farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. But until next time, have a good one.
All right. After hours question. One of our great presidents, I don't remember which one, decided it would be beneficial to the entire country to make an interstate system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He had the foresight that we need to connect everything.
Yeah.
Will there ever be a point in tile that we prove something as a researcher that says this is beneficial to climate change, this is beneficial to all of our crops, to feed the world, to et cetera, and somebody will have the foresight to say, I want the government to pay or help pay to put in mains. I mean, we have county, you know, tile, but hey, let's take it on a bigger scale. We know, we have proven that there is check, all good for tile. It's been proven by Dr. Lindsay. Now, if that's the case, do you think we'll ever get to the point where somebody will have the administrative wherewithal to say, this is so good that we need to keep doing it. We need to force it forward.
Yeah, you know,
and make an interstate system of mains that every farmer in the world can tie into.
That, you know, that would be really awesome. I don't know if somebody would have that, but I do know that if you think about history, this has happened in the past. Way back when the Midwest was being founded, they did have the Swamp Buster Act, which was how a lot of a lot of drain tile went in, especially in places like Ohio in the first place.
Right.
And yeah, so I think anything is possible. I do think it's possible that eventually we could come back around and you know. And if people are doing it in the right, responsible way, you know, draining responsibly, right, which is easy to do, but yeah, I think it's something that has happened in the past and certainly could happen again.
There is totally a marketing ploy that she just came up with.
What,
would it say drink responsibly on here? Because it should say drain responsibly on the side of their truck. There is like the marketing line of the century.
I think the rivers and streams are the road system. Right, like your creeks and all that are kind of your.
But you got to get to.
You got to get there.
You got to get it to them.
Which is what your drainage districts are. Right, drainage ditches and big mains and all that, county mains. Like you did talk about that, so it's kind of in place. It just needs emphasis on improvement.
And
additional.
I think redo that. I mean, I was in the main. Discussion yesterday, and it was from all the contractors was the complaint that everything is too small or doesn't work, or we underestimated it and it all needs, we need all new mains, and they didn't want to redo or fix mains. They just it was no, redo is the word, put it all in new, and that they needed more and more people would start drain responsibility if they had a main to already tie into. It's the fact that I need to get you, me, him, and the other four neighbors down the road to spend $1 million to put in the main so that we can all benefit from it. Mm-hmm. But nobody wants to pull the trigger to benefit from it. But if the government said, we got the mains, now we're encouraging you guys to do this. So exactly what our last podcast was talking about. How can we encourage people? Don't incentivize them that way. Put something in, put the infrastructure in, interstate system, that mm-hmm. they could up their commerce.
Policy.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.
Are you ready to unlock the true potential of your equipment? Look no further than Steinbauer USA. 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 Steinbauer offers cutting-edge performance upgrades that deliver more power, torque, and efficiency to your engine. Visit SteinbauerUSA.com today and unleash the full capabilities of your equipment. Farm smarter and stronger with Steinbauer. Farm for profit, powered by Steinbauer. Are you ready?